Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. I'm Brock Dennis.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, adventures and life hacks, and today, mountain bikes in the city.
At the Beer Mongers.
At the Beer Mongers.
At Southeast Division and 12. We are sitting at the table by the door.
I gotta be careful, like, not to bump the table too hard.
It's cool. I believe in you.
Okay. We've got several sources of recording here.
As you can hear, all live sports games with sound.
With sound.
At the Beer Mongers. And you don't even have to like sports for that to happen.
Still,
you can just show up,
you know,
and there will be sports.
I tweeted about this, and, like, I realized after I tweeted there was a better way of saying this. So I'll say it here now.
How would you revise it?
Even though you don't enjoy sports, you can still enjoy your friends enjoying sports.
Exactly.
With sound.
Yeah.
At the Beer Mongers.
And friends with sound?
Yes, friends with sound.
You can enjoy your friends with their sounds, as you can hear, as they're enjoying the sound of the sports. So I'm glad we cleared that up.
At the Beer Mongers on Southeast Division and 12.
It's a place to find clarity. You and I are both enjoying ginger beer. I am taking about a month off of beer because I gained 14 pounds over Christmas break.
Yeah, and what's, like, one of the first things I did was, like, I started razzing you about this. Come on, man. Like, we got a show to do. You can't do this sober.
I know, and I'm doing just fine, thank you. No, we came here to meet up with Sean Stroop, who is working with the Gateway Green Project, and you're going to hear us and him in the hallway to the bathrooms with the hand dryers.
Because at the time, mind you, there was not. Well, I mean, there was a seat for us.
Yeah, we took them all out in the hallway.
Yes, we just took them into the hallway.
We just figured it'd be easier for you, the listener, to hear Sean without the sports in the background.
Yeah, so. I mean, there was a lot of people here enjoying Clemson versus Alabama.
Absolutely.
Seemed like Clemson was the crowd favorite. I don't know, like, what the statistical favorite is or what the scored favorite is.
As Neil Young said, a Southern man don't need him around anyhow.
All right.
Wait, no, that was Leonard Skinner?
No, shit. Leonard Skinner said that about Neil Young. So you get half points.
I'm not sure if it works or not.
Okay.
So how was your week?
It was okay.
Bad weather.
Bad start.
Interesting weather.
Yeah. I went on a transit adventure with Anna.
Yeah, another one.
Again, yeah, because it was, I will say it was too bad for us to bike.
Right.
Yesterday.
Yesterday there was ice on the ground.
Yeah, and even the beginning of today, it felt worse than yesterday, honestly, just because there was so much wet on top of the ice.
Yeah.
On the ground.
Yeah, no, ice encased the entire city of Portland, and that was problematic for us.
Yeah.
Because Portland does not do well with ice. I don't think anybody does well with ice, but people hear that we get all messed up because of a little bit of snow. And it's not the snow, it's the ice.
Some cities have better infrastructure in place for that, you know.
Sure.
And it's been as frequent as it has. It hasn't been as frequent in the past as it is now, it seems.
Yeah, the weather patterns seem different. Although this comes around every, like, 8 years or so, you get, like, a really humdinger of a winter storm. But it hasn't been this bad in a while.
I've always heard it as, like, snow, not like this whole, like, what I call Southern Michigan in February.
Yeah. And, well, you brought it with you.
Yeah. Well, they salt the roads over there.
Yes, and we do not.
We do not. We gravel the roads. And
we gravel the roads.
I'm not sure how well that works.
You got to get yourself a gravel bike.
I do. I rode a fat bike around.
You rode it here tonight.
Yeah. And even that, like, there was a couple times. It wasn't so much the gravel as, like, the ice, but there was a few times where I wasn't taking the bike lane. I was out in the traffic lane.
Because that's where you can get traction.
I was too afraid of, like, spinning out or, you know, worse yet, the front wheel, you know, coming out from underneath.
Nobody likes that.
No. But anyhow, We took a transit adventure.
Where'd this one go to?
Just out to the Goodwill on 122nd and Halsey. So out east a little bit. So it was just one line.
Yeah.
It went back. Everything was great.
Until.
Exactly. You felt that coming. Until. We kind of missed our stop on the way home, kind of on purpose. We talked about doing some grocery-ing while we were out.
Okay.
And so we kept going, and the line 77 goes down Halsey. This is really Portland-specific here. Goes down the street.
And then it turns left onto 82nd Avenue.
Well...
No, what
well, anyways, eventually it gets onto Broadway, and we get to the Fred Meyer on Broadway there, yeah. But it's like a good at least mile, if not two, from my house.
Okay.
But we do our grocery-ing, and everything's fine, and we get on the next bus going back. Unfortunately, we got on the wrong line.
Oh, where did it take you?
Well, it follows that until about 33rd.
Uh-huh.
And then it turns off.
The number 70.
Yeah, the number 70.
This is super nerdy about Portland. Yeah,
you knew this, though. That's hilarious. Yeah, so we got off there.
Okay.
And realized our mistake.
You had, like, wander back to safety, or?
Here's the thing.
What's
that? So it was raining like crazy.
Yes.
When we got off.
Uh-huh.
So we're getting soaked almost instantly, and we're sliding all over the place. She has
ice.
She has like the shoe chains.
Oh yeah.
So she was fairly safe.
I highly recommend.
Still
those.
Unsure. Mine, I know. Yeah. I need to get me some.
Yeah, mine are the Yak Trax brand.
Yep.
But they're amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great. Honestly, like any type of whatever you can put on your shoe, man, I'm all
traction
for it.
Is good.
I just had my shoes.
Okay.
And I was sliding a lot. Anyway, so we tried to get to the stop. We're like, well, is the stop this way or this way? Like, which one's the closest? And so there was some debate between us. And we ended up walking with traffic, so walking east.
Gotcha.
Towards the stop, because, you know, it follows the road. You're going to come to a bus stop eventually, right?
Yeah, you would think.
On our way to this stop, the 77 passes us.
Oh.
And
now you're out of bus.
And so I was
like the next half pissed. Hour.
Oh, yeah. I was so pissed. Well, because it was during, like, a real delayed... Like, all the buses were delayed.
Yeah, there's no schedule anymore.
Like, you could... Yeah, and there's no way for us to, like, transit tracker.
Because it's a winter apocalypse.
Well, and even if... Because they still do live tracking.
Gotcha.
Over the phone or over the internet.
Okay.
But we had no access to either. Like, even if Anna, like, called them on the phone, we don't know, like, what bus ID or what stop ID we needed.
You need the app.
Well, yes.
But the app,
the app is worthless if you don't have a connected, like, phone, you know.
Gotcha.
Anyway, yeah, that's all, like, kind of here nor there. So I was pissed. So I just started walking home.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you doing? I'm walking home. And so that
were
she
you
was,
aiming for your house originally? Were you aiming for her house?
No, my house.
Okay.
My
so
house.
So you're just like,
yeah.
We're going.
Yeah.
And now she, now comes the
so
long
then
march.
She was upset. So our sort of compromise was the Trader Joe's there on Hollywood to warm up
a place
bit.
To go in.
Yep.
Eat
somewhere
samples.
Inside. Somewhere, yeah, get some samples, hot coffee to warm up, little shot there. I had, right before we turned the corner to Trader Joe's, I slipped bad and, like, ooh, smashed my knee on the sidewalk.
Yikes. And this is carrying groceries?
Carrying, well, yeah, so because we had already stopped at Fred Meyer, right? Yeah, so I had a bag full of groceries, which is soaked by this point.
Oh, sure. Paper bags?
Paper bags,
yeah,
of course, because no
plastic
in the city.
Yeah.
And I agree with that
on
principle.
You can have it in the city. They just don't give them out at grocery stores.
Right, right. I agree with that on principle.
Uh-huh.
However, here is a case in which that whole paper-only policy did not work so well.
You could have bought the like really expensive plastic bags.
I could have bought my own bag.
Give you like an IKEA size bag, put all your stuff in.
Yeah. Anyways, luckily like we didn't like spill groceries all over the place.
That's good.
But I was, yeah, I was so mad. Like, we got into Trader Joe's, and I'm like, I'm just going to stand here inside, like, just inside Trader Joe's. Do whatever you want to do. I'm just here. It's like, well, do you want to get a snack or something? Just go. Just go do whatever. It was so bad.
Did you guys work out to be unfriendly again?
Oh, yeah, yeah, good. Yeah. Everything good. Worked out eventually in the end.
These are dangerous times. The weather takes a toll on one's soul.
It takes a toll, yes.
On one's relationships.
And we did eventually, like, pick up a bus. Yeah. You know, we got through.
With your bare hands?
Yes. That's how pissed I was. It. I was like, bus! Hulk smash! And then my pants were purple and my skin turned green.
Right. Inexplicably, you still had underwear on.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Good job. Glad it worked. Yeah. It's been ridiculous. I have not ridden my bicycle for a week.
Yeah.
From last Monday until today.
Yeah. I haven't ridden it much either.
Right.
You know, because of cold and whatnot.
Cold, wet,
I've been
snow.
Getting rides to work.
I've been running to work.
And you've been running, yes.
I now live close enough. I live about 2 to 2.5 miles away from work.
I've been taking steps to get less in shape. You've been taking steps to get more in shape.
Everyone has their own path. No, but this is me gaining 14 pounds and realizing I have to do something about this.
Something must be done.
I no longer feel comfortable. Because there's, like, you know, there's the point. I've just about gotten back to the point where you carry a little winter weight, but it doesn't feel like obscene.
Yeah.
And I'm just about there. But there's also a point when you're like, I am too heavy at this point. Well, like, I feel uncomfortable about it.
And here's the danger with winter weight is, like, at least for me, I'm assuming for you, maybe not. You know, you kind of get comfortable gaining this weight, and you're like, well, wait, is this going to come off
is
in
it
the
coming off
or
not?
Is it here to stay?
And that's entirely up to me and my activity level. And so I'm running to work. I run to work with a backpack full of clothes that I'm going to wear at work.
Yeah.
And then I change. I've been changing in the bus because it has tinted windows. So
I never thought of that.
Yeah. I'm not sure what I'm going to do when the sun comes up before I start work, but we'll see.
I mean, there's bathrooms.
It'll be warmer, too.
Just take the stall.
Yeah, exactly. But it's been good, and I'm bad at stretching. I got to figure out how to stretch better.
Oh, good.
Because that's going to keep my legs in shape. But it's actually worked out really well. Like, it takes me 20 minutes to run to work. It would take me 10 or 15 once you count, like, I guess, riding the bike and locking it up and all that stuff. So it's not that much of a trade-off. And it's 800 calories as opposed to, like, 150.
How do you deal with the backpack on your back? Like, does it bounce around a lot?
I was worried about that. I've got little straps that, like, kind of tuck the whole load together. And the clothes aren't especially heavy. I'm not carrying a lot of extra stuff besides the clothes. I do have over-the-ear headphones that are, they double as earmuffs in cold weather. And, I don't know, they're comforting. They keep all the sound where I want it in my ears.
Oh.
So it distracts me from the pain.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's been good. So I would like to know, what are people out there listening to us doing that they did not do before the new year? And I don't care if it's a resolution or if it's just like, hey, I don't do resolutions. I just want to do something new.
Yeah.
Or if you, like me, have gained the winter weight, what are you doing to get rid of it? Or are you?
What are you adding or subtracting from your life?
Give us the math.
To your life.
Yeah. All right, so let's roll the interview with Sean Stroop. And we do want to mention he's promoting an event with Gateway Green PDX, which is our brand new. February 11th is when there's going to be a work party. And he mentions it at the end, but he wanted you to know about it up front as well. So that's going to be on our calendar as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
First of all, Sean Stroop in the hallway. With the handrail.
The echo you hear is not your system. We are recording in the hallway at the Beer Mongers on 12th and Division.
Southeast Division and 12th.
In case you mistake that for Northeast.
Ooh, you've got, like, visual aids and everything.
Yeah!
It's beautiful.
All right. Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. Notes!
I mean, I know it doesn't work for the listening audience, but
right.
It works for you guys.
Is any of this available?
As long as you unfold it really loudly.
Oh.
Right.
Very official document.
Yeah. Is that on the website?
I don't believe this particular plan is on the website.
And it's all still kind of in planning stages, so.
Well, we are in construction stage right now.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got single track out there. We've got the start of jump line.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I haven't been past it for a while, but we should introduce you. So, welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is Brock Dennis.
I'm Aaron Flores.
We are in a hallway near the Beer Monk at Southeast Division 12. And we're here with Sean Stroop of the, well, first of all, the team, the Beer Mongers, the Beer Monger Cyclocross Club.
Beer Mongers Cycle Club, yes.
Yeah. And we met you at the party where we took interviews and stuff. You were on in the booth.
Exactly, yes.
Talking about stuff.
Yep.
So we met you there, and that was when I learned that you were involved with Gateway Green. So tell us what Gateway Green is, first off.
Gateway Green. Gateway Green is a park in planning right now. It's, if you know where, Rocky Butte. Just east of Rocky Butte on the other side of 205, there's 25 acres of land there. So it's in between like I-205 and I-84.
So pretty close to the airport and on kind of the east side of Portland.
Correct. And the MAX line goes right through there, so it's by the Gateway Transit Center as well. So Portland Parks and Rec owns that land now. So we are in the process of putting in a park. And the first phase of that park is a bike park.
Yeah, and so this is going to be, it's an outdoor space that's kind of, has been unused for a long time. How do you describe the parcel of land?
Yeah, it's been unused for a long time because the situation that is being landlocked. So in the 1940s, I believe, it was the old site of the Rocky Butte Jail. And then when 205 came in, I think in the 70s, I don't know, I'm not a history major, so I don't know the years, but I think the 70s, like, they took down the jail. And then, yeah, ever since then, the land's just kind of been derelict.
Yeah. By landlocked, you mean that there's a freeway on one side and another freeway on the other side.
And then Union Pacific Railroad is on the east side. MAX line is on the west side. So, yeah, there's no public access, vehicular access. Like I said, there's the multi-use path, the 205 multi-use path that goes right by it. But it's pretty much been unused except for... homeless.
Yeah. Last
many years.
And anybody who's familiar with this, the 205 path, I was going to say the Springwater, but it's the 205 path going north and south along the Interstate 205. That is, it's a big open green space just east of Rocky Butte, and you can't miss it. It's huge. It's 25 acres?
25 acres, that's right, yeah. So, yeah. It's a nice piece of land to work with. It's not a huge piece of land when you're talking about doing single tracks for...
Oh, really?
Mountain biking, but it's a nice piece of land to have.
What's the like normal size that most people would be looking for?
Oh, well, I mean, I guess it depends on what the use you want out of it. Like, it's going to be great for us as far as, like, I mean, we have other uses besides single track, so we'll have, like, pump track and dirt jumps and skills areas. So.
For me, like, who's never done any mountain biking, 25 acres sounds huge.
Yeah, it is a good piece of land, for sure.
Yeah. Did we talk about how you guys procured this land? Like, how was it? How are you able to, like, get it for the Gateway Green?
So, I'm not super familiar with the history of it, but I know the origins go back to, like, oh, what is the date? Probably 2005, I believe, is when they first started talking about it. It started with Ted Gilbert, who is a realtor and property developer in the Gateway neighborhood area. And he saw that piece of land and many other pieces of land that, you know, could have better uses for. So he started promoting. He was on the Gateway Urban Renewal, I think Citizens Advisory Committee. And so it came up from that. And then he got in touch with Linda Robinson. And those two were kind of the spearhead that, you know, started talking about how can we use this space to better serve the community. And that's how it started. And at the time, it was owned by ODOT, the Oregon Department of Transportation.
So it was owned on the state level, not the municipal level.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, so after going through a lot of different iterations, I think it was maybe 2013 when Portland Parks and Rec bought it, and that's when it really started gaining traction of like, okay, this could actually be turned into a park. This is land that we're going to use. So
how long have you been involved with the project?
I'm a newbie. I've only been involved since July of 2016. So they did a DEA, so David Evans and Associates was brought on early on to do a feasibility study and bring in, you know, their community and see like what could actually be done out there, what people want to see. And then Tom Archer with BS, he's been with PBS, sorry, environmental. He's been involved for a long time as well, and they've just been seeing like basically the feasibility of what it would take to turn this into a park.
Yeah.
And especially with the access issue, that's been a big part of it. So I had met Tom a year or 2 years ago and had talked about, I was with a different firm at the time. We were talking about other projects, but, and then an old teammate actually, Beth Flanagan with Beerbongers, and I used to work with her with another firm back in the day too. Like, she got a hold of me. Well, she sent me an email that I finally got because I was sailing the Caribbean and I didn't have any service for a long time, but once I finally got the service, she's like, I got a project you might be interested in, but you got to be back by July. So I actually cut my sailing trip off early to get back here because it's pretty much a dream job for me. Like
I think I remember you talking about the sailing. I don't know if that was on or off tape, but when we were doing the beer mongers party,
yeah,
I remember you talking about you had been on the water for a while.
Yeah.
You're back on land.
Back on land. I've been on the water for 6 weeks. I was going to probably be on there for another week or two. And then I had aspirations of heading straight to South America after that, so I was totally in travel mode, but I couldn't pass up the chance to be a part of this project.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that you there must be something that calls to you about it to give up like sailing to South America or spending time in South America. Like, what is it about Gateway Green that you think is important?
Well, as an off-road biker and...
Oh, it's okay, come on through. You need a tip lender.
There isn't. You see nothing.
That's right. Nothing here to see move along. Cheers to that.
It's not something good in any interview. What called to me? As an off-road cyclist in Portland, you know, we're known as like Bike Town USA or whatever, right? But like, there's really not a lot of mountain biking single track to be had in the Portland area. So this is an opportunity, you know, within Portland city limits to have single track. So I definitely wanted to be a part of that. It's been something that the cycling community has been pushing for a long time.
Yeah, because is there single track anywhere else?
Not in the city limits as far as I'm aware. The Riverview Cemetery, I think, had some, but that's been since shut down. Forest Park, you can ride on a few trails in there, but it's not single track. It's like fire lanes, so it's wider. Yeah. So this is the chance for us to get those trails in there and show the city and the community that, you know, we can do it the right way, and we have a user group that's going to value the land and take stewardship of it. And
yeah. So. Are you aware of any other municipal groups that have done things like this? Like, is this building off of any other templates from other cities, or is this kind of new?
It's not new.
There are other cities that are doing things like this?
Yeah, for sure. Like, bike parks, it's not a new idea. I mean, Colorado has some. I'm thinking Minnesota. There's some all over. And actually, Washougal, Washington, just put in a little... I mean, it's very small, but it still has a skills area and stuff like that. When we went to Louisville back, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, they had the one of the... I think it was the World Cup races there in Louisville, Kentucky. They had a park that was pretty much specifically for cyclocross.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. So we're behind in every way then, at least Portland, Oregon, as far as single track riding and off-road, getting a chance
But, I mean, the nice thing about Gateway Green is 25 acres. It is a good chunk of land, so we can do a lot of things with that.
It's finally opening up.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I was thinking, we talked to Michael Tetta from Community Cycling Center some time back, and I know he had been involved with them helping install a pump track in the New Columbia development in North Portland.
Okay.
but that's probably not widely known. It's more of a neighborhood resource, I think, as opposed to something that people would come from all over town to participate in.
And Ventura Park has a pump track as well, which is really popular. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, the Community Cycling Center, they're a big supporter of Gateway Green and partnership. Like, one of the first things we did for construction there was to put in a what we call a staging area.
Mm-hmm.
So it has some containers to store equipment in, and it's fenced in. And then it'll be like a shade structure, everything. And part of that is because they would like to run a kids cycling camp.
Oh yeah.
That area. So yeah, that's,
they're really good at that because they do all kinds of kids camps in the summer and that sort of thing.
Right. So that's one of the big pushes for sure, is to get kids on their bikes and enjoy it. And, you know, even though they're in the urban setting, to feel like they're out in nature and really enjoy it. So
yeah,
they're a big partner. Lumberyard as well would be running camps out of there too. So
yeah, the Lumberyard is that mountain bike park. I took my brother there, and I went for the first time in November.
Oh yeah,
right after Thanksgiving, and that's quite a cool spot too. But it's an indoor park. So
I've always seen it as an indoor, but they do have some outdoor stuff like out front. Right?
They got big jumps.
They got huge ramps out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
pretty intimidating though. Like,
yeah.
There's stuff that's half the size of the outdoor stuff inside that I wasn't willing to try.
I see. So,
yeah. The Gateway Green, I was just thinking about, like you're talking about people coming in and having a staging area. Are there plans for motorized access? Are people going to be able to drive to this, or is it more like you're just going to bike here?
Yeah, so part of the history was, I think 2013, we did a crowdfund, and that raised over $100,000, and that was for like conceptual planning. So at that point, DA was involved again, David Evans Associates, and Greenworks, who does landscape architecture, they were brought in as well. And so a conceptual plan was made for like full build out. So like I was saying, the dirt lab is only phase one, but there's plans to have nature play in there and to have vehicular access and, you know, all park amenities that you would be used to, like bathrooms. But it's gonna be a process. It's gonna be a time before you get, you know, all the utilities in there and to get the access.
Yeah. I remember one of the things I was hearing about, one of the obstacles to getting this done, was how do we get all the construction equipment that you need to build this stuff? How do you get it in there when there's no clear roadway access right now?
And that is exactly why I was brought in on this. So that was pretty much the main piece of my job, was to work with. So since there's so many agencies involved, whether it be ODOT or Union Pacific Railroad, TriMet, there's a lot of permitting that needs to occur.
Right, because the light rail line goes past there too.
Yep, light rail goes by there as well. So our option, you know, Tom Archer had already done a feasibility study looking at the access points, but then every point that we have available to us took extra permitting to actually get the approval from that entity. So what we've been using are two different access points. Both of them, we rely on Union Pacific Railroad to open up their right-of-way to us. And so we're going within feet of an active rail line, which can be a little bit nerve-wracking at times.
Well, railroads are big business. They're serious business. Oh. Yeah, they're big business. But you got to, like, safety is a primary concern because trains don't stop, can't stop on a dime. So you got to make sure that both the people who are going to be enjoying this in the future are going to be protected from trains, and then that the construction equipment that's there now isn't too close to it and all that.
Right. Yeah. So that was, I mean, a big piece of it was talking with Union Pacific, getting the permitting in place. And basically what we have to do with them is we have to have a flagger, one of their flaggers on site anytime we bring in equipment or material. So, you know, they get a good chunk of change that way, but it's all about safety. It's being safe first. So get the flagger out there. He has the program that shows, you know, the activity. He can call it in, and, you know. So that's been the route that we've been going.
Is it true that railroads don't like to share?
It's very true that railroads don't like to share. And, it was eye-opening for me. I've worked with railroads in the past, but it's usually been abandoned rail lines. I work with rails to trails, so comparing them to, like, you know, recreational trails. But the fact that this is active and owned by Union Pacific, they are extremely powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they say, like, you can't stop commerce. And so...
And that's true.
No, it's totally true. If you, for some reason, you do stop them, if a train stops, you're getting charged $200 a minute mm-hmm. for that train stoppage. And FBI will come out sometimes. Like,
really?
It's, yeah.
Have you had any experiences with that? Or?
So I had a huge scare. Like, I think it was about maybe 3 weeks after we started construction. And, you know, and I had talked to all the contractors. And we were like, you need to make sure you call me or CW is his name, the flagger, like directly before you get on the right of way at any point in time. So we were all clear about that, but you never know for sure. So I got a call at 7 in the morning one day from CW, the flagger, and he's like, I hope you're not trying to pull anything behind my back. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, I just got a call that the train hit a truck
right at the entry
that you're using. And I was like, oh, man. So I started calling all the people that I thought might be involved. Like, our trail builder was out there, so I didn't know if it was just his truck or, like, bringing dirt out. Like, there was three different contractors that it could have been. Called all of them. They were all safe, so I was, got lucky. Come to find out, when CW came out there, it was just some guy that got drunk that night and decided to, like, hop the line and got stuck on it and then stumbled home drunk. And then, luckily, when the train hit the truck, there was nobody in there.
That's the best way it could go, I guess.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a train hit something, but yeah. So what's it going to look like when people are using the facility? Are they going to be like massive barriers or how?
Well, so that's only construction access. For the people using the park, the right-of-way will not be open to them. You will have to access it through the I-205 multi-use path.
So people won't be able to drive directly through the park then. But that's okay because they're going to be bicycling anyway.
Right. And that's one reason that the bike park is... Like, phase number one is considered a destination park. Like,
yeah.
You've got a bike or walk there. So, you know, you can drive to the Gateway Transit Center park there, and then it's only, like, a quarter mile in from there.
Because there's a park and ride, and it's all the way downhill from there.
Yeah.
Just cruise right in.
Yeah,
it's easy from there. Although you have to pedal up afterwards. Or what?
After you get all your single track riding in. Yeah.
The other end would be the Park Rose neighborhood, or the, Rose City?
Maywood Park.
Park, that's it.
We are not promoting that.
I would imagine Maywood Park is not either.
Yeah, that's why we're not promoting it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They've been great with us as well, and they've been very supportive, but it's parking in that little... I wasn't even aware. It's its own city.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not... It never incorporated in with Portland. It's,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Portland's so swallowed up. And it's like Jonah inside the whale, just sitting there waiting for something to happen.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say Gateway Transit Center is the best place to park for access. And that's just temporary. I mean, eventually we will have access in there somehow. So we're figuring out. So at the north end, we use a maintenance bridge. It's interesting. It's owned by ODOT, but it's leased by Union Pacific or vice versa. No, it's owned. Anyway, that's... If we're just bringing in trucks without trailers, we'll come in that route, and it's not as... we're only on the right-of-way for a little amount of time. And it's right off of, like, 105th and Fremont. And so there's talk about, instead of creating a whole new bridge, maybe we can retrofit that bridge and kind of, like, splay it out to have a bigger turning radius that we're away from... Because you need to be 50 feet away from the right-of-way of the...
From the railroad.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we would have to, reconstruct that bridge a little bit to allow that to happen, but that's one option that, you know, is cheaper than building an entire new bridge.
Yeah.
But again, that's, you know, it's going to kind of... So that brings me to a really exciting point is just recently, within the last 2 weeks, Parks announced that they were giving $2 million to Gateway Green.
Wow. Portland City Parks?
Yeah. Portland Parks and Rec was Commissioner Amanda Fritz and Director Mike Abate. It's from the SDCs.
What's the SDCs?
System Development Charges.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anytime there's new construction or you're like... Anytime you're basically pulling more from the city infrastructure, you're charged this fee. And then they do great things like give $2 million of those fees to Gateway Group. That will help greatly in... going further down the road to get better access to the site. Yeah.
When this is all set up, are there going to be people staffing the location, or is it just going to be a playground that's kind of there and people can come and use it, but no one's there to help out?
So that's one thing that's being talked about right now. Friends of Gateway Green is the nonprofit organization that was formed based off of the talks with Linda and Ted. And so there's a board of, I don't know how many people on that, but they basically have become a pseudo parks department. You know, since Portland Parks and Rec doesn't really have the manpower to fully invest in this park right now, there's an agreement between Friends of Gateway Green and Portland Parks and Rec, and part of what that agreement works out is like, who's responsible for what, like the ongoing maintenance, who's going to be involved in that, and so that's all stuff that still needs to be fleshed out a little bit and gets talked about. So when the park officially opens, it's like that still is up in the air as well, as when it officially opens, and there's talk about like, what is the access, what are the access points, is it open nonstop, or is it still gated and you shut the gates at a certain time? So that, yeah, there's still a lot of things to figure out as far as how the park's going to get utilized.
Yeah, I guess I could see conflicts, like especially if it was open all night and I don't know, somebody wanted to do something that you wouldn't do in the daytime on the course, and then somebody else wants to ride bikes on the course at night, and then somebody gets hurt, or someone wants to like set up shop or camp or something on the green,
yeah,
while you know, while it's not being used, and then the next morning somebody comes out early and like crashes through a tent or something like that. Like those are the sorts of things that could happen. So I guess that those are the things that are still being figured out. Like how do we deal with those scenarios?
And that's one unique thing about this as well, is like it's going to be an evolution. Like this park, it's not just going to like open up as a standard park. Like we're going to open up as a bike park, and it's going to evolve from there. Like we're going to learn, and we're going to take. So it's a great opportunity for the community to come in there, utilize it how they want to utilize it, give feedback. Like we'll, you know, we'll be in a state where we'll listen to that feedback, and we'll be able to like change, you know, different aspects of what we want to do with it. So it's constantly evolving and growing, and we want to make it, you know, as user-friendly as we can for as diverse of a user group as we can. It's not just going to be a bike park, but that's how it's going to start to get people into the site. And then, but we're already talking about, like, you know, it's cross-country as well for running. We've had people talk about, like, what is it, the golf frisbee, bird watching, just like, you know, nature walkers. So, like, yeah, anybody that comes out there, we're still open to feedback, and, like, the programming of it is still very open.
Yeah.
And even the bike aspect of it, like, so right now we just have single track in there and start up dirt jump lines, but, you know, we're going to do a flow line, we're going to do skills area, we're going to do pump tracks.
And the more people that come out there.
Yeah, the more people that come out there, the more bikers that come out there and say what they'd like to see, like, it's their chance to actually get it implemented.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So that's one exciting thing about this piece of land, this park, is like, and the way that Portland Parks and Rec is treated. Like, I just, the other person I should mention is Ross Swanson. He's the project manager for Portland Parks and Rec. And I just met with him today, and that was the one thing he wanted to reiterate. It was like, this is the park that is going to be evolving, so we want feedback from the people. And so it's great to be able to have that interaction.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure, I remember getting somewhat like a metro survey about the Gateway Green at some point, okay. I think that was it, but I forget exactly. Anyways, there are a lot of ways to kind of engage with the public about what they want, I'm sure. And they've done a lot of that outreach already, but there's more to be done yet.
Yeah, we'll be doing more, actually. It's going to go through another design phase where, you know, we're going to have another chance for more public involvement of, like, not just beyond, well, but beyond the bike park, like the full build-out. Another chance for the community to come in and say what they really want to see there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, it's an exciting project.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your tenure with the project? Are you on with this until the very end, until everything is in place, or are you kind of part time until you can get to South America?
That's an interesting question.
When can you go sailing again?
I can't talk freely about all of it. My stay right now is that I'm an independent contractor with Friends of Gateway Green. And so it's pretty much on a month-to-month basis. Every month the board meets and they decide whether they want to extend my contract or not.
Gotcha.
So my hope is that I'll be on at least through the end of the dirt lab. But my background also is I'm a landscape architect. Like, I'm a licensed landscape architect. So I'm interested in the entire park, not just the dirt lab aspect, but how this whole thing gets done. And so I would love to be on until the very end. So
when you ride bikes, where do you go?
That's the other guy I want to mention, actually, is Jason Wells. He's our builder out there, and we're super fortunate to have Chris Bernhardt. He's with Sentieros, so he's the contractor for the bike feature designs. He's the guy that laid out like where the single tracks were going to go. Yep, exactly. And then Chris brought in IMBA, the International Mountain Biking Association. Jason Wells works for IMBA, and he's one of the better builders near. So Sandy Ridge,
yeah,
that's his baby.
And Sandy Ridge is up kind of close to Mount Hood.
Yeah,
the most popular mountain biking destination in the Portland area, I would think.
Yeah, it definitely depends on who you talk to, but I bet if you go by the numbers, I bet Sandy Ridge is at the top. It's super fun.
Because I've never ridden there, but every time I go past on a different ride, I notice there's always people there. Like, the lot is part is packed, so.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a big destination.
Yeah.
A lot of people go there. It's one of the places I first started going to when I came to Portland, for sure. And he did such a great job with it to make it rideable year-round. That's one of the tough things with mountain biking, especially in the weather that we have here. Like, usually, if it gets wet, it gets all muddy, and that's, you know, you don't want to ride in that condition. You'll rut it out and
right, because that leads to the degradation of the trail and everything. That's like,
right,
yeah.
That's one of the big reasons why we don't have trails in Forest Park.
So right,
say the erosion issue. But if you just ride at the right times, or if you construct the trail the right way, then it won't be as big of an issue.
Don't shit where you eat.
Yeah. So Jason's been really good about, and because, I mean, also working with Portland Parks and Rec, you know, it's a government agency, so you have these layers of, you know, like, so we're working in what you call the E-zone, the environmental zone. So anytime you're under the canopy of trees, there's certain things you can and can't do. So when we're building single track, the tread can't be wider than 30 inches. If you come across a tree that you want to remove that's bigger than 6 inches in diameter, come across a root that's bigger than 2 inches, like, there's all these levels of red tape that you kind of have to, like, right, you know, work with. And both Chris and Jason are really familiar with that, so it's been an easy transition to work with Portland Parks and Rec, and they have trust in the people that are actually putting the trail in there now, so it's been a pretty smooth process. And
that's cool.
Yeah.
And that all that stuff is done because you want to make sure you protect the environment that you're in. You want to, like, implement some sort of access, have a path or a trail, a single track, without tearing trees out that don't need to be torn out.
Right, exactly. You want to be great stewards of the land. And and it even goes back to, like, when we were lining out the trail, like, you snake it in ways that you have the least amount of impact on the environment. Yeah. And then sometimes you'll see, like, invasive species that aren't supposed to be there, so then, okay, let's put the trail over there and take out the invasive species. Yeah.
So, that's a great idea. I mean,
yeah. So it's been a really fun project.
Nice.
And, it's going pretty smooth. I mean, it took a long time to get to this stage where we could actually start constructing, but once we got the permits in place to start constructing, it's been really smooth so far.
Yeah.
So, the toughest thing has definitely been the access. Like, getting as much dirt as we need in there has been a problem.
Mm.
Because you got to work with the contractors of when they can actually get, and the dirt that we're getting has to be a certain spec. So we need at least 70% clay, because we need to be able to mold it and, you know, shape it and have it stay the way it needs to be. So getting that type of dirt has been difficult, and then lining the schedule up with contractors with the schedule of Union Pacific Flagger, it's just been, yeah,
that's a lot of logistics.
It's a lot of logistics, yeah, but it's definitely coming together, and we actually just got a really good source of dirt that's going to happen early February, and I just talked to C-Dub the Flagger, and he lined out a whole week for me, so the first week of February, we should get hopefully more than enough dirt out there to do all the things we want to do for the bike portion of it, the dirt lab aspect of it.
When you're molding all this stuff, all the features of the park, mm-hmm. How do you think about those? Like, when you're putting them together, what goes through your mind when you're thinking, this goes here, this goes there?
Well, that goes more towards Chris and Jason.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of more responsible for collaboration of all the entities involved and make sure the construction happens, but Jason and Chris are the guys who can see it. You okay. know, like, yeah. So I've been picking their brains because this is something I'm interested in too,
uh-huh.
for sure. And it's fun to be around those guys and listen to how they see things. But
it's a dark art. Like
sometimes it's just they just see it in their head, and that's how it is. Like, you get Jason on a piece of equipment and you give him some dirt to play with, and in like 2 hours you've got a dirt jump line that's like jumps that are 6 feet high and 10 feet long, but he knows the spacing of how, like, you don't have to pedal in between, right? Like, you just use the momentum to go from one and just flow to the next, and that's something that you can only pick up with experience, right?
Yeah.
From doing it time and time and time again.
Is he operating the equipment and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So he rides the bikes and he operates the... Is it a bulldozer? Is it a...
There's different things out there. Every once in a while he lets me play with the equipment too. there's actually a gentleman outside of Portland who created a piece of equipment that there's 15 in existence, and it's called the ST240. It's for a single track 240, and it's this heavy piece of equipment that you can actually use remote control, because a lot of times when you're doing single track, it's really remote and you're on this big side slope and you're not really sure if, you know, how the equipment's going to handle that.
Uh-huh.
So you can, like, stand back in a safe spot. And
if it falls down a ravine or something,
right,
you're
still okay. Which it never does, because the guy engineered it really well, and it's super heavy, so it just blasts through. So we use that because of the tread width. You know, it's really hard to find a heavy piece of equipment that can move earth that's going to only do 30 inches wide damage.
Right.
So that's when we roughed it in. He uses a mini excavator a lot. So it's got the bucket on the front and the plow on the back.
And that sort of thing.
Yeah, very similar to that. Another thing we've used a lot of is like a motorized wheelbarrow, because bringing in, well, one of the huge things was like the history of this land is, well, let's just say it's colorful. So we find all kinds of stuff out there, whether it be
a ship.
Yeah. Found that. We found water tanks. We found tires. We found sharps. All kinds of stuff. So that was one of the first things to do, was clean up the site so we could feel comfortable having volunteers come out there. And, you know, we just need to make sure it was safe.
Yeah.
So
was there a lot of pushback from like the people living outside? Was there a time where you kind of had to go like, okay, everybody, we got to push you all out?
That was the first big hurdle when I was brought on. I mean, there's plenty of big hurdles, but when I was brought on, that was the first big hurdle, because the timing was pretty rough. They had just done a sweep of the Springwater corridor.
Oh,
and so all
the people from Springwater went to Gateway Green.
Water relocation, so, and then they relocated again.
We went from having 30 camps, which was standard, that's how many people would usually be there, to from 30 to over 100 camps on the site. So it was really, you know, delicate, like, how we handle that situation. So we had, certain agencies come out and talk to them beforehand and let them know what their options were, and let them know, like, this is going to be a construction site, and so we need you to be off of here for your safety. But it wasn't just like, get out of here.
Right.
You know? Like, we gave them options and let them know what could happen. Some people were graceful about that and left. Some, you know, took out their shivs or whatever. Like, I did have a golf club swung at me at one point.
Really?
Yeah. But for the most part, it went really smooth, and there's a lot of really good agencies in Portland that help out with that. And so we did have to do a construction fence around the whole thing. So that's probably one thing that you see when you drive by there now, is the entire site is fenced in.
A lot of fence.
So, and it's been good. They've, you know, we say you're still out of the camp, just not inside the fence, but anywhere else, that's fine. And for the most part, they've been really respectful of that, and it hasn't been much of an issue.
All right. Anything else you're excited about?
The one thing I really want to mention is February 11th. February 11th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. We're going to have what we're calling the Big Dig at the Dirt Lab. So, volunteer day. Northwest Trail Alliance is going to sponsor this, so we'll have water and food out there, and we want people to come out. And so right now we have 3 single track lines. We have single track up high in the woods, and that's more for capturing a wide range of users. You know, since we're going to have camps out there, we want it to be accessible to every kind of user, like whether it's your first time on a bike or not. So that's another way that the designer really helps the situation is like you make a trail that a beginner can ride on and have a good time with, but the way you undulate through the land and the way you make the turns, and an experienced rider can have fun too. If they just go a little faster, they can like, you know, clear some jumps.
It reminds me of at the lumberyard when I was there, there were certain parts of the course that were intended for beginners, but I could see how, you know, if you were pretty good at this stuff, you could still use those to your advantage to kind of have fun. And
right.
If the track you wanted to ride was full, you wouldn't feel like you were on the kiddie cars or something.
Exactly.
So
yeah. And that's the same kind of idea out here. Like, you have a green line, which is like beginner, and a blue line, which is more advanced. And so setting up like that, you know, the more advanced riders are going to be going fast on the Lipper Trail. So then you have kind of a conflict of user because you have people who are going to be fast and really slow. So Portland Parks, once they saw how we had punched in the first single track and that it wasn't doing much damage and they'd done it the right way, and they were comfortable putting in a second line in the woods. So we now have the cliff line, which is right along the edge of the other cliffs. So having it next to that topography creates more of a challenge. Like, even if it's the same kind of trail, it just feels like it's more dangerous because you're right next to that cliff.
Yeah.
But we've made it more technical. So it's windier. It's going to have features with boulders and like built wooden features. So things that'll allow a technical rider to be more challenged and will slow them down, you know. So yeah, so it's those kind of things of like, how do we get the most out of land and get the most users out there interacting together? It's probably going to be suggested directional, you know, that'll help with the flow and keep people, yeah, yeah.
So you're going to have people running into each other head on.
Right. Yeah. And so the third line is at the toe line, and that's, again, pretty, it's just kind of flowy and not a lot of relief to it, not a lot of topography, but it'll be like a get-back trail. And that's the main thing we'll be working on February 11th for the volunteers to come out and kind of cut that third line in and shape that, and also probably doing some of the more technical elements on that cliff line.
Yeah.
Yeah, so come on out and be involved and yeah, shaping the park.
Should one bring like any tools or?
No. Well, I mean, if you have them, bring them for sure. Northwest Trail Alliance has been generous enough to donate a lot of their tools. I mean, we probably already have over 50 people committed to coming out there, so it's going to be a big push. So yeah, if you have the tools, bring them. Also, the website is gatewaygreenpdx.org.
Nice.
So go onto the website, gatewaygreenpdx.org. It'll have all the information there you need. You can sign up to be a volunteer. If you want to donate some money, which would be awesome, there's still a link to donate money. That will go directly towards building the features that you want to see out there.
Very cool. And yeah, we'll have that on our calendar until it happens.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you for taking the time, Sean. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you for putting up with the hand dryer.
Yeah, next time the Airstream, baby.
Seriously,
yeah.
This would be much better.
Okay. All right, ready to go for the last half?
Yep.
There's not too much here. It's been a slow week.
It's, yes. So, first up on the calendar,
January 28th.
Collab Fest at Base Camp Brewing and She Jumps PDX and Oregon Timber Trail.
Right, Collab Fest is the first time in January I will be drinking beer, and I'm going to be very excited about that.
Yeah.
February 27th, Menagerie in Motion, Kinetic Derby. We can't go because it's on the other corner of the country. But it's going to be awesome in Gainesville,
Florida.
Thank you
for the invite, by the way.
Yeah. We do appreciate that.
Yes.
Yeah.
February 11th. That was great. Is the work party over at Gateway Green.
PDX.org.
By the way, no parking there.
Yep.
So you can
bike your shovels.
Bike your, or you, yeah.
Or just bike
exactly
there. They'll
bike
have
your
a shovel
equipment.
For you.
Bike there. You could drive to Gateway Transit Center.
Or you could ride your
there,
bike the whole way.
But, you know, the real cool kids are biking the way.
True. If you need to use a car to go, you can park it inside of the service area at Gateway.
You can?
A little island of service out there, yeah.
Huh. I was not aware of that.
Yeah. March 11th, the Dalles Mountain 60.
Yeah.
Which is 60 miles of awesome out in eastern Oregon, and it's going to be lovely.
I should see if I can't get the Pugsley out there.
You should.
Yeah, that'd be
60 miles on a Pugsley?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I don't know. Just the 2 miles down here was actually pretty hard.
What tire pressure would you have your tires set to for that ride?
For
a little bit of gravel, a little bit of road?
I'd probably bring it up a lot more. Currently, okay. It's at 5.
5?
I would probably bring it up to, like, 15.
We were saying earlier, I can't run my bike on 5.
Yeah.
But you can. Congratulations. I can.
However, even though I've got 5 PSI in there, I imagine there's... the amount of air is much more than what you've got in your tire.
Yes, you've got more air.
We're talking just pressure versus volume.
Yes, I am under pressure.
June 14th,
Bicycle Christmas. All right, headlines. So this came in from... Shit, who did it come in from?
Dun-dun.
I forgot to add the... Hang on.
I'm on it.
You have mail? Okay. I've got mail. Sometimes in the mail we get headlines.
Sometimes in the headlines
we get mail
from Fred. Fred in Dallas.
Okay, Fred in Dallas. I'm so sorry, I forgot your name. He says Dallas, the entire Dallas-Fort Worth metropolis, actually is an interesting place for cyclists. It used to be very hostile, but now there are places where it's simply divine to ride a bike. There are some excellent trails and a lot of places where you can simply ride on the road and control the lane without being run over. And a lot of not so much, unquote. Nevertheless, I'm quite encouraged by things like book bikes, which on the surface seem pretty stupid, yet underneath offer a great sense of hope. Cue the Princess Leia.
Princess Leia theme from Star Wars.
That's right, yes.
A new hope.
And this is a news story about the Dallas Public Library has bikey librarians who decided to put some books into a bike trailer. Not just any bike trailer. It's a very specifically custom-made bike trailer. Did you get a chance to see this?
I did not.
Let me show you, because the picture is quite fantastic. Okay. Here's a picture of the Greene County Library system.
Oh, wow.
And the custom bike trailer enclosure that they have made, which doubles as a Wi-Fi hotspot. So all the kids can sign up for library cards.
Is that a Surly? That's a Surly trailer!
Yeah.
That's a Surly trailer!
Is it a Bill? Or
it's
Bob?
It's the Ted.
Ted.
It's the right. Ted.
Yeah. Bob was not in those movies.
There was no Bob as far as I can remember. Yes.
Yeah. But this is a really cool idea. It reminds
it
me just a little bit of Street Books here in Portland, although Street Books is specifically for people. I mean, anybody could use it, but it's targeted to people who live outdoors. Who might not have access to a library card for whatever reason. This is targeted to people who don't have a library card but could get one using the Wi-Fi hotspot inside the trailer. And they could use the books inside the trailer once they get their library card. So it's aimed to boost literacy amongst the youth, and it's a pretty cool idea. So you got to check out this link. Check out the pictures. They are beautiful.
I hope it doesn't just boost literacy, but also boosts biking.
Transit literacy.
And not just biking, but the kind of biking, you know, that would involve taking a trailer and whatnot.
You can carry stuff.
Exactly.
I'm a fan. So, thank you, Fred, for sending that to us.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. And with that, we may not have a bicycle trailer full of library books at our disposal right now.
We don't.
But what we do have is...
We got mail.
Hey.
We got mail.
Yeah. Kathy in Japan wishes us a happy new year.
She got to see it before us.
She did, because she lives in Japan. So, happy new year.
Yeah, thank you.
Whenever that comes to you. You might observe a completely different fiscal calendar.
There you go, yes. Some people might still be on the Byzantine calendar.
Right. Whatever year you celebrate, whenever it shows up, we hope it's a good one. Jeremy shares a hiking itinerary by bus on Washington State's Olympic Peninsula.
And here it is. Transit hike through the Olympic Mountains.
And this is pretty cool because the Olympic Peninsula in Washington State is well served by transit. You can go almost all the way around the entire thing. And the map there shows that they took all these different bus legs for their trips and boats and all this stuff. It was a multimodal adventure. But part of this trip was hiking directly through the middle of the peninsula, which is a national park, which is beautiful, full of trees and bears and stuff. And they
totally outline, like, you know, their timetables.
The whole itinerary, yeah. And this is exciting to me. I don't know if Jeremy knew this. I don't think I mentioned it, but Adele and I are thinking about a trip into the Olympics this summer. And we would use buses to get there. Yeah, and then we would hike and sleep on dirt and meet bears and stuff. So we'll see.
Cool.
Last time I saw a bear in person was in the Olympics.
Was it
last time we were there. Yeah, and we were hiking... while we had our bike stashed somewhere.
Did he try to steal your picnic basket?
No, no, but he might have been. We did see the bear go over the mountain.
Oh.
As in the song. Like, we saw it walking up over a ridge, then it disappeared. So I'm assuming it was going to see what it could see.
I'm sure.
So, anyways, thank you, Jeremy, for sending that.
Yeah.
So, with that, let's close out the show.
Sure.
Unless there's anything else you need to share.
Nope.
Is there anything else you want to tell
us? Well, I feel like there's something that I really should be sharing.
Well, let's share.
I can't think.
We're good. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Call or email to or call. No.
Or email.
Email us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text or email to 503-847-9774.
Twitter or just Twitter. Or Instagram at Sprocket Podcast.
Or shout loudly into a Pringles can. Thanks to Riot J. Lane for our theme music.
Herb Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to sustaining donors Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot,
Katharina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lean, Richard Bozinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen-Miller,
Todd Parker, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt,
who is a time traveler, Zoe Campagna, Dave Nose, Chris Smith,
Christy Kaster, Caleb Jenkinson, J.P. Cooley,
Peanut Butter Jar Matt, Patrick R. Chain, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew in Colorado,
Drew the Welder, Anna, Krista,
John Wasserman, Andre Johnson, King of Division,
Josh Zissen, Richard G., Guthrie Straw,
Brandon Shelby, Campsite, Aaron Green,
Mac Nurse David, Kathy at Cycling, Walking, Eating, Talking,
Nathan Bolton. Chris Ross in Roy, Michigan, Michael Flournoy,
Jeremy Kitchen, David Belays, Tim Coleman,
Mr. T, Harry Hugel, who's giving me advice on bromptoning in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much. Ed Whitman,
EJ Finneran, Paul Culbertson, and Subvert. And he does not run a fashion magazine.
But he should, maybe. I've seen the way you dress. And all of our former donors who helped us get this far, thank you very much. Now, brush your teeth.
Finish your ginger ale. Leave the beer mongers and go to bed.